You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. This is episode 180, April Showers, Office Worker Resources. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, your weekly host. This is episode 180. And this is a show where we talk about technology and its impact and potential uses in ministry. Joining me, as usual, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye in Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. And I would be remiss if I didn't say happy birthday to you. We are recording on your birthday today.
Thank you. Yes, April 19th every year. It comes without fail.
So it's a social birthday. I can see already on your Facebook page that you're getting birthday greetings from all over. It's a different kind of birthday event these days.
You used to be able to kind of, you know, quietly let it slip by, and that's not the case anymore. And I don't know if Facebook requires a birth date. So I don't remember actually putting it in. I must have at some point, but it's out there for everybody to see. And this is a big one this year. I made it through a half a century.
How about that? Congratulations on the big 5-0. That's great.
And I was just looking at the number of podcasts that we've done, and I can hardly believe we've met like this 180 times, Sally.
Yeah, it's all kind of getting to be kind of blurry at this point. A lot of conversations, and boy, have I learned a lot along the way. And thankfully, I've learned from you, my podcasting partner, and even more so, I've learned from our great community mm-hmm. of listeners. And we just continue to be blessed by the wide variety of experience that's out there and their willingness to share with us share with the class. So.
Yep, that's been the most pleasant surprise of this whole experience is just the new people that we've met along the way. Not just the people we interview, but the people who contribute to the show in other ways. And even just people we run across in, you know, delivering workshops or events that we attend, you know, people walk up to us and thank us, and you know, I think that's a wonderful thing.
It is, and just a neat thing that we're able to take advantage of technology and use it in this way in service to that gospel message, mm-hmm. and we feel very blessed to be doing that.
So we're going to continue our series on April showers, and one of those groupings or group of people that we run across and we communicate with on a pretty regular basis, kind of the linchpin of the congregations and schools of our synod are the office workers, and they take many shapes and sizes. Some of them are call workers who work in the office. Some of them are paid lay men and women, you know, in our synod, and some are just volunteers. In fact, most are probably volunteers across our synod, and we've done a number of shows. We did a whole series, in fact, on office workers, but we thought we would kind of look back over the years now and try to pull together all the resources that might be of some aid or assistance to those folks who toil in the church and school office.
You know, some of my best friends work in the church mm-hmm. and school office. You called them the linchpins, I think maybe central nervous system of the whole shebang.
And you want them to be your friends for sure.
Absolutely. Having an efficiently run office goes mm-hmm. a long way to having a very productive ministry. And so all that we can do to support this great group of people is very worthy endeavors. Mm-hmm. So. Yep. Getting started, our first topic on the list is file storage, and that's a pretty big topic, Martin. We've dedicated lots of podcasts to this topic, as well as blog posts and other resources, and so mm-hmm. Right off the bat, I think it would be great to point people to a recent blog post of yours where you talk about being in the cloud. Maybe you could tell us a little about that.
Right. Well, the question is, are there tools, are the tools that are available in this Web 2.0 world mature enough to allow for workers to essentially be in the cloud for a majority of their document creation and document storage, whether that be just regular word processing documents or databases or whatever it is. And it's kind of an interesting study, and it's the industry is shaking out a little bit, and there are some leaders in the space, but almost every vendor has some kind of cloud offering, whether that be for storage or backup or just sharing and collaboration. So some of these solutions that we're going to have on the list allow you to create a document on your desktop in the traditional way and then either sync it online, or some of these other tools actually allow you to create the document online, so you don't even really need desktop or local storage. And that's really the question of the post, is that how far have we come? Do some of these tools work in that kind of fashion? And in a church and school office, I would think, Sally, maybe you have a good perspective on this too, that I don't think I've overstated in the case that a majority of our school and church offices are online. They have pretty consistent access to the internet. What do you think?
Oh, I definitely agree. In this day and age, I think the many people that I have contact with are definitely online. And I can see, kind of a twofold reason to want to be in the cloud as an office worker. One is just to have access potentially from home or remote access to whatever work that you may need to do, the flexibility of working from home when needed. Maybe you have a sick child or something like that, or you just need to do some last minute touch up on a bulletin that's got to be ready for tomorrow, and you need to be able to work on it from a remote location. The other thing is, with our diverse populations in our congregations, boards and committees working on different documents, things like that, being able to share with others outside your church office could be a real powerful tool for you as well. Make your meetings a lot more efficient if you can do some file sharing and discussion kind of outside of the face-to-face meeting environment, be able to do that kind of thing online. And so, maybe it's a shared copy of a new amendment to your constitution, and you want five people to get in there and edit it collaboratively. Well, there's definitely tools now that you could use, such as your Dropbox kind of thing, where you put a file out there where different people can view it in a public space, or even shifting to something like a Google Docs kind of solution where you're actually working online.
Right in the tool. I think one of the big points that should be made here is that if you're still shuffling around and using email as your primary file mover tool and file sharing tool, there are better ways to do that. That's inefficient. It doesn't promote kind of a single source of the real document. And the tools of today really enable that. And then the whole other side of that is, once you are using cloud storage, whether that be in a syncing or just a pure storage solution, you have file security. So you've got both the ability to share securely, but also the security of knowing that your files are in at least two locations or backed up in a way where you can get them back if some disaster were to strike, which is important to consider. Every congregation and school should have some kind of disaster recovery plan. And if you're backing up locally, that's a good thing, but that's not enough. I think you really need to have off-site backup, and the tools of today really make that easy at a pretty affordable price.
So if we were to just run down this list of file storage and sharing software, we'd probably include Dropbox. That's the one that I use personally. It's they'll give you 2 gig of storage for free, allows you to have things private so that you only have access to them, or public so that you can share links to specific people or to the world if you so desire. Mm-hmm. Gives you a lot of flexibility there, real affordable to add storage as well. Another in that space is Box.net, and then Windows Live SkyDrive, which I think the Windows Live solution actually gives you 25 gig of free storage.
25 gigs, right. Works a little bit differently. You've got to work a little bit harder to kind of get that local feel to it. Dropbox and Box.net and some of these other cloud-based services provide local folders where you just drag stuff in and it automatically syncs. SkyDrive is a little bit behind in that regard, where you have to, you know, physically upload, although I think there are some third-party tools that'll map a drive for it.
So a mashup is possible.
Yep. One nice thing with SkyDrive, though, is if you are a Microsoft Office Suite user, works really seamlessly with that, so that if you create a document in Word, let's say, you would have an option to save to your directly to your SkyDrive or edit essentially in the cloud. So that's kind of a nice feature as well. And plus, you can actually work in their online, their web apps versions of those tools, so you don't have to actually have a copy of Microsoft Word, or whoever you're sharing it with doesn't have to have a copy.
I guess worth mentioning as well would be Google Docs. And we talked about using Google Docs for collaboration, and we'll get some more into that, those kind of options later. But Google Docs does offer just flat-out storage. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be working on a document per se or a spreadsheet-type file. You can store images in your Google Docs account now, or PDFs, or basically any type of file in your Google Docs. And I want to say they give you about 7 gig.
Yeah, that's kind of a moving target. But yeah, it's kind of combined with Gmail and Picasa and those things. So,
mm-hmm. A few others. Amazon has a solution. I think it's a little bit more pricey. Mm-hmm. They call it their Cloud Drive. And AVG, the antivirus software, actually has something called Live Kive now, which is online backup storage kind of solution as well. So,
yeah, and theirs is 25 gigs for $50 or unlimited for $80, which is not a bad deal.
Right. And lots of players in this space. I guess, Martin, being the cheapskate that I am, you know, part of me says, well, I can go get 2 gig from here, and I can get 5 gig from here, and I can get 7 gig from here, and I never have to pay. But I think very quickly you're going to get really confused about where your files are stored.
Yep.
If you spread yourself out, it's probably better to centralize on one solution and maybe go ahead and you know, chip in a few bucks so that you have enough storage to be able to actually share and do the work you need to do online.
One solution that we've mentioned in the past that I think was one of my picks of the week was PogoPlug, which is a little bit different. Basically, you're providing your own cloud storage. So you are hooking up a little device to external hard drives and making them available online so that you have always on or available access. The only problem with PogoPlug is that it's really not cloud-based backup. The cloud is essentially wherever your internet infrastructure is. Mm-hmm. So you have to take a couple of extra measures to get an off-site copy of that. But that's a pay once and never pay again kind of proposition. So you don't have to pay the monthly fee for that.
Lots of pluses there. Yep. Now, there are other solutions that are strictly for backup.
Right.
They're not intended for sharing files and accessing them on a regular basis, but more on doing regular backups on a schedule or whatever.
Yep.
So you know that you're covered. And three that we want to make mention of in this space, Mozy, mm-hmm. Carbonite, and Backblaze. Do you have a favorite?
I use Backblaze for my home stuff. And one of the reasons I do is because it will back up external attached storage. So if you have an external hard drive, it will see that as a regular drive and go ahead and back that up. I don't think Mozy or Carbonite do that, but they all work kind of with the same principle. You set them and forget them, and it just kind of throws all that stuff up in the cloud for, you know, whenever disaster strikes and you wanna get it back. So
And didn't I read a statistic once? Maybe we've talked about this on the show, and that's where I'm remembering. But your hardware is destined to fail. Mm-hmm. It's designed to fail. So you can be sure that those hard drives that you depend on a regular basis are probably going down someday, and you want to have these backups in place.
Yeah, in fact, if you look at your hard drive, it will typically have a mean time between failures number on there. So, you know, when you can expect something to fail or a portion of it to fail. So, you know, no technology is made to last forever, either because it can't be done or because the manufacturer wants you to buy another one from them. But either way, it is going to fail at some point. So it's just a matter of when. And probably every listener to this podcast can tell us a story of lost files. I know I can.
Yeah, me too, unfortunately.
Yep.
So. Another category we want to hit on in this section is remote access, and mm-hmm. it's a slightly different flavor to the online collaboration. This is more tunneling in, getting access to a local computer on your network, and there's a couple of different solutions we'll mention in this space. One that we're using now at the Senate is called TeamViewer,
right.
And we're real pleased with that product. It allows you to log on and actually control the mouse, control the keyboard, see the complete screen of a different computer. Mm-hmm. And so if you had this running potentially on your office computer at work and had the proper passwords and things like that, you could just log on and run your computer from home or from any remote location. Actually, you could do it from your iPhone or your iPad even. I mean, there's all different flavors of this TeamViewer software that allows you to do it in a remote way.
And these kinds of solutions, Sally, are really helpful if you're running something like Shepherd Staff, which is not internet enabled, at least not yet, and it's not overly portable either, unless typically you want to put the database on a server, but you don't have access to that from the outside. And sometimes it's nice to be able to just log in and do some work, you know, when you have available time, whether that be in the evening or weekends or whatever, without having to go into the church to do it. So TeamViewer is a great choice for that. The only knock on TeamViewer, there is a paid version, but for the free version, you can install it on a server. So if you're hoping to manage a Windows 2008 server, something like that, 2003 server, it will not install, at least the free version will not. Some of these other products will. LogMeIn, which is the next one on our list, will allow you to do that, as well as Ultra, you know, the whole VNC suite, which is also open source, basically, will allow you to do that as well. And they all kind of work on the same principle. You need a client and a server, and as long as the server is up and listening for your request, it'll work. And I find that most of these products work pretty nicely through firewalls even, so there's not a big hassle to set these up.
Speaking of servers, we would be remiss if we didn't point people to our network servers page on the Wells Tech Wiki. Within the last 6 months or so, there's been some really good discussion out on our Wells Tech listserv. We captured all that on the Wells Tech Wiki, and it revolves around all different types of server configurations. And so if you're looking at that side of Office Work, more the hardware setup of your file server system, you might want to check out that page on the Wells Tech Wiki.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome information there. People far smarter than we.
Absolutely.
Contributing to that conversation. So
you're here. So.
Next category for office workers, which I'm sure everybody pretty much lives in, are the office suites, the office suite software. And we've done a number of shows on different concepts or variations of this. In fact, just 5 weeks ago, we did a whole show on Office 2010, the new release, and now Office 2011 for Mac is available. I've been trying that out. It works really well. Even the Outlook on Mac is available on the Mac for the first time, which is really good. And we came across some really good Microsoft training materials and templates as well, so we'll include those in the show notes. But Microsoft Office is not the only suite that's out there. In fact, you don't use that there in Sleepy Eye, do you, Sally?
No, we don't. We use OpenOffice, which is an open source free solution for an office suite, not as mature as the Microsoft products, not as like ribbon friendly and that
right.
kind of thing, but also very, very functional and
very, very free.
Once you've Yeah. Once you've worked in it for a while, you can certainly develop a good level of comfort. They have the complete suite. So you have your spreadsheets and database and presentation software as well. And mm-hmm. a companion product or a parallel product is LibreOffice. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned that not too long ago, Mark.
But, right. That's the open source spinoff. OpenOffice was bought by Oracle. And now I think I just read the other day that they're spinning that off again or releasing it out to open source again, or true open source. It was kind of branded Oracle. But so Libre sprung out of the fact that Oracle bought OpenOffice, and now you've got a couple different options. So, and that works on many different platforms, which is the good news. Office 2010 doesn't do that as well. So that's definitely one. And depending on your needs, it may be just right. And it sounds like it's meeting your needs, Sally.
Yeah, and I think even if you don't need it across the board in your whole setup, potentially you could use it in a computer lab or on the student computer setups, and at least they have some word processing capabilities and that kind of thing. Maybe you use Office in the actual mm-hmm. church office. So sure. you could do a mashup of solutions. And OpenOffice will save in document format and things, so it's very compatible with the Microsoft products as well.
Right. And then we've already talked about Google Docs. If you want to go kind of in the cloud, you could use Google Docs, or you could use Office web apps. So I think both of those are on a par with each other. In fact, if you're more comfortable with the Microsoft Office suite, Office web apps might be a good solution, because basically you can create Word, Excel, PowerPoint right in your SkyDrive accounts. You've got online storage that way. So cool tools. And if you're interested in buying a solution, make sure that you're checking out shopwells.net. I just got a new price sheet for the Microsoft Office suite, so we'll be publishing that very soon. So if you want to check out academic or charity pricing, we're going to have hopefully the definitive word on those pricing models. That is really a complicated and confusing area when it comes to Microsoft pricing.
Right in there with the Office suites is a specialized suite of software that many in the church office would make use of, and that would be publishing software. Mm-hmm. Your Microsoft Publisher or even Adobe InDesign, Scribus, those kind of things are also very critical to things like newsletter development
right.
In the church office. And
now,
so
you've mentioned Scribus before. Scribus, I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Is that something that you have used? Refresh my memory, Sally.
Actually, I have a really cool story about Scribus. It's an open source kind of parallel to Microsoft Publisher or Adobe InDesign. It's a publishing suite.
Under GNU. Yeah, okay.
Available for free download from the internet. And recently my kids participated in Google's Code-In event where they could sign up and actually get paid for doing projects on open source software. And one son did a lot of work in Scribus. So he actually learned Scribus kind of from the ground up, took some existing flyers and things from an open source company and redid them in the Scribus platform because they wanted their flyers even to be done in an open source format. Mm-hmm. And so he and I kind of learned together in a very full-featured publishing platform there. It's got a learning curve just like everything else,
right.
A powerful tool for sure.
Awesome. This I don't remember whether I ever downloaded this or not, but I'm going to try it because this looks like it would really help out with in the church or school office with newsletter design or even bulletin design if you want to get a little fancier than what Word can do. So
absolutely,
would you agree?
Yes, okay. Definitely. And we actually have a whole podcast that we dedicated to newsletter design. We have an interview with someone who was doing an excellent newsletter, and we have lots of links and things to share for clip art and photography from that podcast. It's episode 158, and so we'll make sure and include a link to that in our show notes today. Lots and lots of resources for clip art and photography, which is, again, kind of critical to church office work, and we want to make sure and make mention of openclipart.org. Mm-hmm. And also iStock Photo, Photo Express, and Stock Exchange, all great resources for stock photography. And what you want to be real careful of is that you make sure you have the copyright permissions
right.
to use the imagery that you're making use of. And so by using these kind of sites, you're either purchasing, or the images are open source and public domain, so you know that you have the proper copyright permissions.
Yep. Very good. So. Next category we'll just briefly touch on, because we do kind of weave it in and out of most of our shows, but that's productivity. We had an interview with the staff minister, John Rudat, back in episode 162, I think.
Yep.
And we talked about his experiences with getting things done. He had attended one of my Winterim classes, I think it was, and then had tried to put that method into practice, which is kind of the basis for the class that I teach, with some,
yep,
you know, variations thrown in. And I think productivity is always a concern in the church office and school office, because there's so many things you're trying to get done in too little time, and to make the best use of your time and be the best steward of your time is an important thing. So there are all kinds of tools and approaches and processes that you could put in place that would hopefully make that a little bit more efficient in that church office. So we will put a link to that show in the show notes, and you can kind of review what we talked about there.
Definitely a good discussion there, Martin, that we don't want to glance over too quickly, because I think, you know, we can have the greatest software tools and hardware in place, but being organized is more than just software and hardware. It's actually having a dedicated approach to regularly reviewing what your to-dos are, and maybe regular meetings where you're looking maybe three months out into the future, instead of just really focusing on the moment, being more proactive and planning out into the future and things. So I think there's some real good tips in that. Actually, John inspired me. If you go back and look at that podcast, he shared a link of his desk before and after, and organized himself quite handily. And hopefully, John, your desk is still just that clean and organized. I know mine's a lot cleaner after seeing yours, because I did the whole clean sweep thing too. So
awesome.
That makes a big difference in your church office as well.
Part of that conversation, Sally, and I know this is something that I try and get into the workshops that I teach, is how to get others to be productive as well, because sometimes it's not you. You know, sometimes it is, but sometimes really the bottleneck lives outside of your office. And how do you get others to be more productive? And that's a whole different conversation, but there are different ways to do that. And maybe the best way is to lead by example. So if somebody sees that you've got it together and that things are running along smoothly, there is an inspirational kind of thing going on there that will help them understand, boy, this could really be valuable, and this could really enhance our ministry.
Absolutely. John was definitely my inspiration. When I when we talked with him, then I was definitely motivated by his work, and I think that'll spread over to you, and then you can spread that goodness throughout your office as well. So good stuff. Next category we want to touch on briefly is church management software. A critical thing in the church office is managing all the data of your members and prospects. So, you know, exactly who they are and how to get in touch with them, and when their baptism and confirmation dates are, and marriage dates, and all of that kind of essential information of the church office needs to be organized somehow. And very quickly it becomes a monstrous task, because there's a lot of data to keep up with. So having a great database in place is really critical. One that you and I are both familiar with is Shepherd Staff. You mentioned it earlier. Wells actually has a great relationship with Concordia Technology Solutions, the vendor behind Shepherd Staff, and we get a discount from them for our Wells congregations, and have various resources available for training and support on Shepherd Staff as well. But there are others. Martin, I think you came across a really good comparison chart of the different software.
Christian Computing Magazine, CCM, has a nice chart that they maintain, I think, on a fairly consistent basis, that lists all the major church management systems. So there's probably, I don't have it in front of me, but probably 30 of them that they list there in a grid style, and they do a compare and contrast by all features, price, and the whole thing. Very valuable tool for anybody considering different church management software. So check that out in the links in the show notes. And then you mentioned Shepherd Staff, Sally. Concordia, which is the creators and maintainers of Shepherd Staff, are about ready to, or have already launched, a product called Church 360, which is an online church management solution. I wouldn't say it's the next iteration of Shepherd Staff, although it handles some things a little bit similarly. It really is its own product, and it's a total online version that I'm evaluating now, and probably will do a blog post here in the near future on my take.
Very good. So moving on in the church office, then we have a whole category of communication tools that we want to make sure we mention, starting with the ability to have electronic newsletters. A new thing, I think, for many churches is to move away from the thick paper monthly newsletters that they produce that are paper intensive, certainly expensive to do, to go to, in contrast, a free electronic newsletter that can be emailed out, potentially posted on your website, that kind of thing. And one tool that we've kind of zeroed in on for great e-news production is MailChimp, MailChimp.com. They'll allow you to do several thousand communication.
I think 5,000, isn't it?
Emails per month. Yeah, it keeps going up, actually. Yeah. So, and we actually dedicated a whole podcast back in the summer of 2008, I believe, to MailChimp and all the tools that are available with MailChimp. They have professional templates and make it just super easy. They have great training resources. You can import a list that you have in existence or build your list online. People can manage their own subscriptions. So if they want to opt out of your mailings, they can do that. Just a real powerful tool. We make use of it in Sleepy Eye, and it has just been a real lifesaver, especially when we have snow days like every other day of the week.
Right.
It's really easy to get the word out with a tool
yeah.
like that.
And then some of the more traditional ones, obviously your website needs to be almost the centerpiece of your communication strategy. Facebook is there. We've talked about Facebook in the past. And then the other tool that I think most congregations and schools should maybe use a little bit more than they do are online forms. People are obviously used to doing stuff online, and the ability to collect information and even take donations or registration fees or whatever is certainly available in an online fashion. And we mentioned a couple, many of these in the past. Jot form is one. Final Web obviously has their own forms. Woofoo, WUFOO, is it woofoo.what?
Com, I think.
Is it .com? Yeah. Online form generator. So all kinds of ways to make this really easy. Form. I remember the days, Sally, when creating forms with HTML was just a total pain in the neck. And now it's just drag and drop and click.
Yeah, it does make it really simple. Mm-hmm. One more communication tool that we failed to list on our mind map, Martin, coming in late to the list, is our calendar tool that we make use of in the church office.
Right.
Boy, how did we miss that
We
were doing our notes?
That is really one of the things that a church office has to get right. So.
Yeah, we use Google Calendar, and we've been really pleased with the collaborative nature of that. You can actually share a Google Calendar between multiple staff members so that, like in our situation, the office calendar is maintained primarily by the secretary, but the pastor has access to it. The teachers have access to the school calendar, so they can, on the fly, make changes to it. Literally, we can do it from our iPod if we need to, if we're in a meeting or whatever, make changes to our calendar. It immediately syncs to our website, so those changes are real time. Everyone that has access to the calendar or views the calendar can see those changes as they happen. And the calendar can also be sucked into personal Google Calendar. So like our members can include their church calendar with their personal calendar. So lots of flexibility with the Google Calendar solution. And I think we have a podcast dedicated to how to do a church Google Calendar as well. So we'll make sure and look up that link.
And to close it out, Sally, this would be a huge oversight if we did not talk about one of the primary tasks of a church or school office, and that is wrangling volunteers.
Wrangling, I love that. We do a lot of wrangling here.
To find those people willing to serve and organize their activities. And we did a whole show on getting and keeping volunteers a number of months ago. And there are all kinds of tools and blog posts and across the nonprofit industry, because this is not a challenge unique to a church or school office, but it's certainly really central to getting stuff done in a church and school setting. So we've talked about a blog or a website called Volunteer Spot, but there's also all kinds of tools, Sign App Now, Pick a Time, You Can Book.me. All of these tools are crafted to make it real easy for people to say, hey, I want to help, and this is when I can, and this is what I can do.
That's right. Lots of great articles and things on that Volunteer Spot. So a really good starting point is just to kind of get involved with Volunteer Spot. You can really mash up what your responsibilities are with the different time schedules and availability of people. Give them lots of options. And there's just lots of ideas to do that creatively on that site. Yep. So recommend that one for sure.
All right. So if you have other things that we overlooked, and I'm sure there are, please let us know. As far as church and school office worker resources, there's a growing list. So we'll have all these resources on online, and feel free to let us know what we missed.
Hey, I got to update you on one thing. MailChimp allows 12,000 sends per month.
Late breaking news.
That's right. they got quite the thing going on there for free.
Yep.
So
that's really good news for our congregations, because almost all of our congregations don't send out that much. So
right.
Good free solution.
Yes.
Let's move on to ministry resources.
Yeah, I heard from my friend Martin Spriggs, and he came across
Not
a great
really,
resource
but I,
for.
I found a blog post from Cyber Brethren, a Lutheran blog that was letting everybody know about a great resource, at least for seminarians and graduated seminarians, pastors in the field, that Law and Gospel, Walther's book called Law and Gospel, which is a seminary staple, at least when I was there, is available on the Kindle for $13, and that is a great deal. Certainly much cheaper than you can buy the printed copy for. Allows you to do searching. And remember, the Kindle is not just for those people who have a Kindle, but you can install a Kindle app on almost anything at this point, whether that be a PC, an iPad, an iPhone, an Android phone. All those things can display Kindle material, and for $13, that's a great deal.
It is. We need a blue light special or something. Maybe I'll find a blue light image to put on the show notes.
Beautiful.
That's great.
Beautiful.
Thanks for that.
Yep.
A couple of mentions in the news and tech category. First of all, last week, Cisco announced that they're discontinuing the Flip camera. Interesting move on their part. They bought it out, and they didn't really even want to sell it off at this point. They just are going to completely kibosh the whole thing. They were right on the verge of releasing a Flip that would allow for live video from your Flip camera, but apparently the powers that be at Cisco decided this was something they didn't want to be in the business of anymore, even though it's a very successful product.
So. Yeah, and I think the death of the Flip was probably precipitated by the onslaught of camera phones. Almost every phone today has the ability to do still or moving photography, and certainly the iPhones have FaceTime and all these other things that will grab video images, and just a standalone tool like Flip, even though it had great reviews when it came out, a lot of people use it, didn't have a life past that.
Sad news.
You didn't have a Flip, did you?
Actually, we got one for our school.
Oh,
we
that's
got one
right.
at Christmas time for
free
and we really enjoyed it. It's been a great tool for the students. They can use it, and very easy to do, one big red button to push. Anybody can handle that. So
yep.
Sorry to see it go.
Yep.
The other news in tech that I wanted to make mention of is that Google Video is officially dumping all the video that is posted there. They haven't allowed video uploads since maybe like 2009. But I know when we were in our early days of podcasting, Martin, Google Video was a real prime area because they allowed video uploads longer than the YouTube a 10-minute limit, right, or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And so, like, to get a sermon online, that was a really great hosting place. Obviously, people have moved away from it because they haven't allowed uploads for such a long time now. But now they're actually going to dump everything that was uploaded to Google Video. So if by chance you have some video out there hanging over on the Google Video site, you might want to get a copy of that somehow, because it's going away. Yep. As of May 13th.
Yep, throw it up on Vimeo, which is our video, online video tool of choice.
Very good.
Should we talk about contest winners, Sally?
You bet. This was an exciting week for us, with a contest going on each of our individual blogs to give away a copy of the Glow Bible software.
Yep, we had talked about the new version. We both blogged about it, and the intent was that we would ask people to comment on our blogs, and then we would pick one person from Sally's blog, one person from my blog, and give away a discount code that the folks at Glow have provided us.
Yeah, both of us got a copy of Glow Bible, and we're able to review it. We've talked about it in our most recent shows. I've enjoyed learning more and more about the capabilities of the software, and it's, I guess, about a $70 value that they shared with us to give away on our blog. So on my blog, I asked everyone to post their favorite Bible verse, and I really enjoyed reading everyone's favorite Bible verses this week, and nobody had a duplicate. I thought that was pretty cool, and nobody actually got my favorite Bible verse, which is 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my brothers, mm-hmm, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. So that, yes, would have been what I posted, but the others who posted on my blog, I'm going to go ahead and use random.org and generate a winner from the list on my blog. And I got, boy, things kind of work this way. I got Rachel Arnold.
Okay.
Hey, Rachel. Rachel won recently in another contest we had on Wells Tech. So good for you, Rachel. I'll be in touch with you soon with the information for downloading your Glow Bible.
And let me do the same. I will go to random.org, pick a random number, go down the list. Steve Mathwig.
Ah, very good.
So we will be in touch with both of you, and we will send you the discount code. You simply need to download or install Glow Bible and then add this code in, and you'll be upgraded to the premium version. So congratulations to Rachel and to Steve.
Very good. Time for our picks of the week, and I'm going to kick things off with a scrapbooking pick. This is what everybody listens to Wells Tech Podcast for, scrapbooking tips.
That's a different podcast, Sally.
One of my most useful websites recently is letteringdelights.com. And this is actually a website designed for scrapbookers, where they can get digital imagery, TrueType fonts, all kinds of things to use in scrapbook type settings. But I used it in a different way. We recently hosted an LWMS rally at our church, and the theme was a gospel oasis south of the border. So we went real big on the whole Mexico design theme. And I was able to find graphics and fonts to use as I decorated bulletin boards and did signage and things like that to decorate for our LWMS rally. And most of the things on the site are in the $1 to $2 range. So I spent about $3, and I had some really high quality imagery that I could make use of, print as many
Song we sing, for Christ is our reward.